Last week, Senator Sherrod Brown was in town, not just for the home opener, of course, though I'm still thinking they scheduled their recess in the House and Senate to coincide with all of the home openers over the last couple of weeks. Brown says no, but I don't know if I believe him. But one of the things he was doing is he was talking to some people around town about the kind of money and the kind of resources that are needed to get our infrastructure right. We know, heck, all you have to do is drive down some roads in, you know, the middle of early spring, and you know we've got some infrastructure challenges in our community. But Curtis Baker joining us, back with us from AMATS to break some of that down. And Curtis, thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
What is the need at this point? I know when you're talking to the feds, a lot of times it becomes a dollar figure, but how much do we need at this point to get ourselves right?
Well, it's interesting, and I think it depends on what kind of infrastructure you're talking about. Just from a pavement perspective, when we do our analysis and we're looking out, you know, 20 years down the line, how much is it going to take to, say, maintain every road, resurface it every 10 years, and reconstruct it, which is, you know, when you basically tear the road out and rebuild it every 25 years or so, what's the cost of that going to be to our region? And for us, from a federal perspective of what federal dollars will pay for, it's about $4.4 billion just for Summit County and Portage County and a little bit of Wayne County, the area we cover. And that doesn't even include things like local roads. And by local roads, I mean like neighborhood streets. So all the curlicue cul-de-sacs that most people live on, you know, those are really the responsibility of the locals, of the local communities, city governments. And so the burden is incredibly heavy for these local communities to kind of carry the water and keep those roads in good condition.
And when we're talking about where the feds come in, that's just, what, state routes and interstates pretty much?
Yeah, and a little bit more than that. They call it the federal aid system. And basically, your West Market Street, East Market Street, Arlington, major roads like that, we can get federal funding for. When you get down to residential streets, you know, Castle Boulevard, Avondale, roads like that, you know, that's solely the city of Akron. And so what we try to do as an agency that can help bring in the federal dollars is our hope is that, hey, if we can help take care of West Market Street or, say, another, you know, major thoroughfare in the city or in other communities, that gives the community more money than to use towards their local streets.
And explain how that works for people who aren't familiar. When you're talking about bringing in the federal dollars, I think we always see the end result, some politicians saying, look at me, I brought all this money for a new road, but what happens before that?
Well, it's an incredibly long and convoluted process, and you know, finding transportation infrastructure dollars, there's multiple sources from the federal perspective. Some of it is allocated directly to the state, and the state gets to decide how they want to use that. Some of it gets allocated to agencies like ours. Our agency gets about $10 million a year, which when you're thinking about a $4 billion, you know, life of cost for our roads, $10 million a year isn't much. But we get about $10 million allocated to us through a federal legislation that's called the FAST Act, which Congress passed in 2015. That money's kind of allocated up through 2020 that we know what we're going to get. What's interesting now is sort of what's going on in the federal sphere when you talk about President Trump and $1 trillion of infrastructure. What he's talking about doing is basically creating new legislation out of the ether to say we're going to spend $1 trillion more than what we're already spending on infrastructure. And that's what gets really interesting, is because no one really knows for sure who's going to fit the bill, and then also what are we funding and how are we going to fund it. And so one of the things that a lot of agencies are looking at, and even when talking to Senator Brown last week, was sort of like, hey, if we're going to have $1 trillion, what piece of the pie do we want? What can we get, and what should we be looking at?
And what would we get out of that $1 trillion? I think that's the big question. What, both in terms of dollars and then what those dollars become.
Right. It's a big unknown right now. In December, the Trump transition team had put out a 50 most important projects in the nation. Biggest high-dollar infrastructure projects. They included things like sewer systems, dams, roadways, bridges, etc. Our region didn't have a project on that list. The Brent Spence Bridge down in Cincinnati was on that list.
That's the one over the river.
That's the one over the river. Yeah. That's they're looking to. It's going to be about $1 billion, I think. And The issue with that is what they're saying is what the Trump team has said consistently is we're looking for private dollars to fund these projects. And the only way you're going to get private dollars to fund a project is if you can guarantee that private funder that they're going to get a return on their investment, which means, and I think we spoke about this briefly last time we were together, which means tolls.
Right.
So if, you know, if you're going to be an investor and I'm going to pay $1 billion up front to build this bridge for the government, well, I'm expecting to charge this much money every time somebody drives over it so that 10 years from now, my $1 billion will be, you know, $1.5 billion, whatever the rate of return would be.
So a safe assumption is through that method, we're probably not repaving West Market. We're probably not redoing the Route 8 bridge. I don't exactly see myself needing an easy pass to get to downtown Akron anytime soon.
No, and that's part of the concern. And I think a lot of the what you would call the Rust Belt communities, the Rust Belt states, you know, if you were in Arizona and you're building the third beltway in Phoenix and you know there's just growth, more people are moving there, more cars, et cetera, that's a good environment for a toll because you're going to say, well, instead of your commute being an hour, we're going to be able to reduce your commute for a half hour. And how much are you willing to pay for that reduction? Here, you know, because we don't have a lot of congestion and we're not growing, it's a poor environment for tolling. So what agencies like ours are doing, and one of the things that we were speaking to the senator about, and that I think he's very well equipped and understands, is that if you let this thing hinge on private investment, there's going to be a lot of communities that get left out. So how is there going to be a public component? Is there going to be, you know, money from the federal government that's going to be infused into our region for additional projects?
Well, and we're talking to Curtis Baker from AMATS on 1590 WAKR. I was thinking it is probably, you're right, easier to say, hey, we need a new road because our roads are too clogged and it's taking me an hour to get 5 miles than it is to say, in the case of the Route 8 bridge, hey, we need a new bridge because if we let this one go for another 5, 10, 15, whatever many years it is, you might go flying into the valley off that bridge.
Right. Yeah, and we do tend to have short memories. I think, you know, it was 2007 in Minneapolis when that one bridge collapsed. It was structurally deficient, and I believe 7 or 9 people died. And at the time, all of a sudden, it was like, we got to do something about infrastructure. We got to fix, you know, but then time passes and we sort of forget those things. And the reality is that if you look at the long trends, and people older than I am will remember that, you know, through the 1950s and 60s and even the early 70s, we built this magnificent, you know, state-of-the-art transportation system from the highways through our arterials, through everything. And now the maintenance bill is coming due. And the reality is that, you know, if we want to maintain the infrastructure that we have, we're going to need to infuse more public dollars into it, especially in areas like ours. And that's where you get into really difficult conversations with, you know, communities and members of, well, right now, you know, you guys might not realize it, but you pay an extra when you fill up your gas tank, you're paying 18.4 cents of that is federal gas tax money. That money goes to the feds and then it's distributed back to the states and to the regions. You know, if the government raised that 5 cents a gallon, 10 cents a gallon, you know, would any of us even notice it at the pump versus what would be the benefits of that funding and you know, how much would you see it on the roadways? And that, those are the kind of the questions that I think a lot of people want Congress to ask, not so much saying, yes, raise the tax, but that's the discussion. But what we're seeing from the federal environment, and we saw this with the attempt on the healthcare repeal and et cetera, is that anything that looks like an entitlement, like a tax, is just it's the wall goes up and there's no discussion. And so we've been trying to finagle, well, how are we going to get this extra money? And that's a real challenge.
What I've always said on the gas tax is, and I'm a fiscal conservative, but I'm okay with a gas tax if I have confidence that it's going to go to what it's supposed to go towards. Fixing bridges, fixing roads, where it's actually more of a use tax. And if my memory serves, it hasn't always been that way. And I think maybe that's why some people get a little spooky on it.
Yeah, and I think – and just there's a low level of trust and faith, I think, in general in government.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of, you know, if you're giving – if someone says I'm going to raise my taxes, well, how do I know that I'm not getting – you know, paying for this versus that? And quite frankly, it is something that, you know, I think the government has tried to be more transparent about. But you do see in other kinds of programs that sort of waste happen. I mean, I think the GSA or the General Service, you know, is famous for sort of, you know, taking trips and doing all this stuff. And I think the reality is for something like the gas taxes that we already have a system set up where in reality most of the – almost all of the money that's going into it is required to be used for transportation improvements. Some people – some conservatives don't like the fact that some of the gas tax can be spent on transit. You know, it's used to buy buses as well. However, that's been sort of a long-running policy as a way to help – you know, like our Metro RTA and PARTA and Portage County be able to fund buses. But it is a tough argument. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, we have to be good stewards of the funds and that when you see a project built, you've got to know that it was done the right way and done fiscally responsibly. And that's a challenge.
And here's one of the other concerns that I have. If I'm going to pay 10 cents more in a gas tax, which again, I'm not opposed to in theory, I want that 10 cents of gas tax to go towards rebuilding the Route 8 bridge or repaving something here in Ohio. I don't want my 10 cents of money going to Phoenix to build, would you say, their third beltway out there?
Yeah. Don't quote me on that, but they're working their way around the city, multiple rings.
But
yeah.
I don't want my money going to that. I'm never going to benefit from that.
Right.
You know, I want my money staying at least relatively close
right.
to home.
And for the most part, Ohio does okay. There's a, you know, we can really get wonky, which I don't want to do, but you know, as gas tax goes, federal gas tax, Ohio gets about 92% back of the 100% it pays into it. And the reason that is if you think about states like the Dakotas and Montana, where you have this large stretch of interstate, but very few people, you know, it's basically a pass-through. And so the federal government sees the responsibility of being a federal responsibility of the interstate system, that some of that money needs to be, as they call it, donator state or you know, donee states and receivers. But
sure.
So basically what we're looking at, so Ohio tends to donate some of our money to the rest of the system. However, you know, 92% of it's not great. We would like it obviously to be 100%. And that's sometimes where the political calculus comes in and, you know, who's fighting for what. I think the most famous example of the waste that we've talked about or that, you know, people remember is that idea of the bridge to nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, this building a bridge from a town in Alaska that had 8,000 people to a little island where 50 people resided that currently was being and still is now serviced by a ferry. A lot of that stuff that is sort of the transportation waste was really in the earmark process or in the pork process of, you know, senators and congressmen attaching things to bills as almost like flyers of, oh, well, we're going to do this. I'm also going to add this $50 million project here. And now since that's sort of that process has been eliminated and we've had basically a ban on earmarks for about, I think, almost 10 years now, we see less of that kind of waste, which is good for everybody.
Well, and see, we can't talk too much about the bridge to nowhere around here. We had a freeway to a pizza place for many years until just recently.
Right.
We did kind of have a freeway to nowhere
right.
for a while.
Well, and we're still dealing with that. I mean, obviously, Akron's been very proactive now with the Interbelt, which is going to be, I think, a really good project in the long run. But there's remnants of that. You know, the highway system that, I mean, it was going to go all the way to Kent. And if you think about 261 in Kent, south of the university, you've got a, you know, four lanes of traffic that's separated by a huge, I mean,
I believe that's called Kent Motor Speedway.
Yeah, exactly. And those are things that we built on the idea of the IFCOM or this idea of growth, and they just didn't pan out. And now, you know, the city of Kent, the state for the parts that are the township, responsible to maintain that, and it's just not necessary anymore.
So what are they thinking out there? Because I read about that, and I use that road a lot when I'm mm-hmm. going to Kent. I used to live out there. What are they going to take it down to just like a two-lane deal, or what are they thinking?
I think that's a possibility. You know, AMATS is actually in the process partnering with the city of Kent to look at that part of State 261 of what makes the most sense long-term. It's still in the very early planning stages of what would be best. I mean, what we do know is that, you know, typically when you hear the term road diets, you're looking at roads that have less than 15,000 cars a day don't really need four lanes of traffic. They can operate on two or on three, you know, two with a center turn lane. In Kent, I think the highest traffic is about 12,000 cars. So it doesn't need the amount of that it, you know, the amount of lanes that it has out there. The question is, you know, what can you do for a reasonable amount of money that still improves safety? Because that's the other big component of this. The intersection of 261 and State Route 43 is an incredibly congested area, and you can't make huge changes to that without thinking about, you know, is this going to reduce crashes?
Right. Other than that, though, I mean, that whole rest of that stretch of 261, you keep
going. It's a speedway.
I mean, the only jam-up point is when Kent State's playing football, and that's only five times a year.
Right. And so. and we're to the point where we can no longer we can no longer build our infrastructure to accommodate college or high school football games. I mean, you know, just because things back up on a Friday night at a peak time, you know, we're not able to do that anymore. That's just, that's not where we are in a financial climate.
Well, and we see people getting creative too. If you leave like half a lane of asphalt on the side of the road, they'll get creative with cones and give you all the lanes you need. So, I mean, it's amazing what they can figure out. And all this is probably assuming too that Kent State's football team improves, but that's neither here nor there. We're running short on time here, but it's interesting to see how this goes. And have you had talks with other representatives about this at this point?
On this most recent recess since the Trump administration, this was our first conversation. Okay. You know, we expect to have more. The Senate is really the key area to have the discussion in from the perspective of, as we saw with the health care, is that the Senate is sort of the area where there's probably needs to be more reconciliation. And, you know, whereas maybe on the House side, they can kind of push something through. But on the Senate side, they're going to be the voice that sort of brings back things that maybe had been cut out by a more conservative bill. So from our perspective, you know, talking to the Senate, but also obviously our congressional delegation, it's really important for them. And I think it is on their radar. It's just, you know, when you're talking about $1 trillion, I think for most normal people, like trying to say, well, like, what would that do? You know, it's hard to put into words. You know, we spend $10 million a year and, you know, we make slight improvements. You know, we're able to resurface so many roads a year or things like that. But, you know, to say, what would $1 trillion do to our national infrastructure? It's hard to wrap your head around. And it won't all happen in a day. It'll be a 10-year process of developing projects and putting the right ones in and constructing them. And that's, and in the long run for people, that means more orange barrels.